This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway. Wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Ryan Kleindienst. Now, Ryan has a background, an extensive background, working for different fish and game agencies, conservation departments, things like that, in a couple different states. And so we're going to dive into a lot of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, the things that you might not see. He's going to give us a look into what a normal day working for a state conservation department looks like. On top of that, we're going to dive into a bunch of hunting and fishing stories like normal, but this is going to be a really good episode. Now, I'm assuming wherever you're listening from has open turkey season right now. Most places, it's in full swing. I've been seeing pictures and videos like crazy online. And here where I'm at, for the past several weeks, I've had a ton of birds on camera. Unfortunately, the cattle farmer moved the cows into a spot where I am really familiar with hunting them. I know kind of how they work, what their patterns are throughout the day. And because of that, a lot of my trail camera activity, as far as turkeys go, has kind of dried up. I'm just getting a ton of cow pictures. So I might have to shift things around and start pursuing birds in a different spot on the property, get kind of creative. But if it's like past years, I seem to have a much better season all throughout if I start the year off strong with a turkey harvest. Last year, didn't kill a turkey, had one of my worst years ever as far as hunting goes. So I don't know if there's a whole lot to that, but I just feel like there's somewhat of a pattern. So I'm really hoping to at least fill one, if not both, of my turkey tags as well. I'm hoping to get my kids out and get them both on a bird. So we'll see how that goes. But good luck to you guys if you're turkey hunting. For now, though, let's jump in to the episode with Ryan.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life.
I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today is Ryan Kleindienst. Ryan, thanks for hopping on with me, man.
Thank you for having me, Dan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we had one scheduled. Work got in the way, as work often does, but it was for good reason. Why don't you tell people like what you do? What do you do for work?
Yeah, so I work for the Pennsylvania Game Commission as a wildlife habitat manager. So I plant the food plots, do prescribed burning, timber harvests, do some water structure controls. The main thing, I guess, that I really do is just managing for wildlife and making their habitat better by removing invasives and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do you, with invasives in Pennsylvania, like what kind of invasives are we talking? Is it a lot of plants and insects, or is it bigger animals?
It's mostly plant species, okay. Especially autumn olive. Autumn olive is our big invasive in our fields, in our woods. Like, it just, as soon as it grabs hold, it just takes over. And the only way that we can really control it is literally with a skid steer, with a plucking tool. And you got to pull out the whole like root system and all.
Oh, dang. Yeah, that sounds intense. I'm like, when it's an animal, you can get people on board to come out and shoot them. But man, going plant by plant.
Yeah. No big major invasive animals in PA yet that need that kind of control.
That's good. I was talking with some buddies. Actually, I think I was talking with my cousin. He came down and was hanging out for a while, and we started talking about hogs, and he's like, oh, do you guys have hogs here? And I'm like, we do. They're starting to creep in. We don't have a huge population of them. I said, but they're everywhere. And he's like, dude, I'm glad we don't have them in Wisconsin yet. Well, I pulled up like the map of where hogs are right now, and they do have them in Wisconsin. And I think the numbers said there were around 50 feral hogs in Wisconsin. I'm like, you can probably bet there's quite a few more than that. If they're advertising 50, I'm sure there's a whole lot more.
Probably about 150 more that they don't know about.
Yeah.
So I dealt with hogs when I lived down in South Carolina for 6 years, working for their DNR as a wildlife manager. And everyone says, oh, we want hogs. No, you don't. You do not want hogs. All they do is root everything up. They destroy dove fields. They root up the sides of roads. They're going to push your deer out of the food plots because they're rooting them up. Like, a hog is the last thing you want. Yes, people want to hunt year-round, and they give that opportunity, but they are a problem. As soon as they are there, they are extremely hard to get rid of because they just multiply time and time and time again, and it's hard to control.
Yeah. I've talked with hunters. I've talked with several hunters down in Texas, like in person, and I've even gone hog hunting with some guys down there, and I'm like, dude, okay, what do you think about the hogs? And they're like, dude, they are such a problem. I said, if you could snap your fingers right now and get rid of them, would you? And they said, no, they are fun to hunt. And I'm like, ooh, I guarantee if I asked a farmer that, it would be a totally different story.
It all depends on who you ask. Farmers, they will snap a finger at literally the moment that you face. But like certain people, they just want to be able to like hunt something year round, and they are fun to hunt, but they get extremely educated fast. They get trap shy, like, and as soon as they're educated, they're teaching all the other ones, and then the offspring get taught. Like, it's just a mess that you don't even want to get started. So anyone who says that they want hogs, you do not want hogs. Trust me.
Yeah, I feel that. I'm like, as soon as they show up here and the deer disappear or become 100% nocturnal all throughout the year, I'm going to be pretty upset. I'm fortunate to where we don't have a problem with them here, but I can still go hunt them in somebody else's state.
Exactly. Exactly. just travel out of state and don't bring them back to your home state because you don't want them.
Yeah. So how did you get started in like DNR, Fish and Game Commission and that whole thing? Was that something you wanted to do from an early age?
Yeah. So I always enjoyed working or going to like zoos and seeing wildlife on family vacations. And then obviously when I started hunting with my dad and my grandpa, like that really fueled my passion to want to start working with animals more. And like, that's when I decided, hey, I'm going to go major in wildlife fishery science. And I did that at Penn State. And then after I graduated, I went down to help with a turkey project that Georgia and LSU were working on in the Southeast. And it just so happened to be in South Carolina. And was down there for 8 months. And while I was down there, a full-time job came open. I applied, got fortunate enough to get it. And then was down there for 6 years. And then just recently, last July, moved back up home to Pennsylvania and started working with the Game Commission up here.
Oh, nice. Has it been what you thought it would be? Or is it totally different than what like you went into it thinking?
Different. You tend to think, oh, I'm going to work with wildlife. Like I'm going to be hands-on with wildlife all the time. And it's really, it's not. Like, I would say I was extremely fortunate in South Carolina. I got to rocket net wood ducks and band them. I trapped woodcock and put bands and transmitters on them. Did the wild turkeys, trapped the hogs, trapped deer and put radio collars on them. We did a ringneck duck study where we trapped them and then put transmitters on them. And then mourning dove banding. So like down there, I did get a lot of hands-on experience. But that really, it's not like that all the time. Most of your time in wildlife management is spent doing herbiciding, planting, disking. And then there's a lot of other stuff like that you doesn't really have to do with wildlife, like maintaining roads, putting up gates, boundary signs, like all that. Like it all works together. But I feel like the tendency of everyone who's like, oh, I'm going to be a wildlife biologist, they just think, oh, I'm going to work with wildlife and be like hands on with all these animals. And it, you're really not. Like those moments come. And when they do, you enjoy them more because they're so special and they're just, they don't come around all the time.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would imagine like being up close and personal with some of those animals, like talking about banding doves and wood ducks and all these different things. It would be pretty cool as an outdoorsman to all of a sudden be like in the mix of it all. And I know that a lot of states and a lot of areas offer opportunities for volunteers to go and be part of different things. Obviously not everything. They probably, yes. The public probably doesn't want to know what all you guys have to do in order to maintain stuff and take care of pests or invasives, but like I feel like that would be a pretty cool experience to be out there putting all that together.
It is. It definitely is. Like I'm extremely fortunate in the field that I am in because you do get to see a lot of stuff that most people don't see every day. Like most people, they're going and working in offices or in, you know, factories or shops and all that. And I always say like my office is outdoors. Like I'm in the woods, fields, creeks, streams. Like I'm going through all these different habitats that some people like they only get to go in when they're going hunting, and I'm doing it every day.
Yeah.
Now there's benefit because you, like you said, like the public, they think, or they tend to believe that like we're just managing for one species. And in reality, we're managing for numerous amount of species, and some of the species require early successional habitat, or they need this kind of habitat over this. And it's a lot of on the ground, hard hands-on work. Like it's not like we don't just snap our fingers and things happen. We have to literally, there's days where I've plucked autumn olive from a field for a week straight. You're just in a tractor plucking invasives. it's not hard work when you have a machine, but it's very monotonous. Like, it gets boring quick. But in the grand scheme of it, when you convert that field from autumn olive and get it more into a grassland habitat, it does the species diversity that then uses that field. That's the rewarding part.
Yeah. Yeah. I could see going through all of that work and then actually seeing animals out there or doing studies and finding out, like, look, we increased the use of this portion of land by five different species, whereas before maybe only one species liked to be around it. And I hear people talk about that just in personal food plots or personal habitat improvements. They're like, dude, when I first saw a deer using my food plot or transitioning in that spot that I created, like, it was more rewarding than harvesting a deer.
Yeah. Yeah. And that, like, essentially, I like to say that we're all like gamekeepers. Like, anyone who manages their property for the wildlife, like, we're farming for wildlife, as Mossy Oak would say. Like, we are literally helping the wildlife. And, like, it takes a special person, because it's easy to just go out and hunt, but to put in that work on your own property or on public land, and, like, seeing the results, not only for yourself, but for other people who are utilizing that land, that's the rewarding part. Like, yeah, we all love to go kill big bucks, but seeing deer come to your food plot, you know, before hunting season and utilizing it, that's the rewarding part, because we know that we're helping them and that we're doing something correct.
Yeah, that's so cool. Moving down to Missouri from Wisconsin, I really enjoyed seeing what Missouri Department of Conservation does with their properties that they have. And I haven't had a whole lot of experience hunting public land in Wisconsin. We always hunted private. Aside from like maybe every now and then squirrels and ducks, like, I'd be out on public. But as far as deer hunting, which is primarily what I did growing up, it was all private. And so I didn't really see what the Wisconsin DNR was doing. And then now come down to Missouri and watching MDC, it blew my mind when we went out to some of these fields and we would go out scouting a couple weeks before duck season. And I hear generators running and water pumps running, pulling water from the river to flood a Milo field just for ducks. And they're like, dude, we've got somebody on this thing 24/7 until this field is flooded the way it needs to be. And in fact, right down the street from one of my properties, my buddy invited me. We went out rabbit hunting. We did some at my place, but then we went over to this other spot. And I walked through and I'm like, holy cow, these guys are managing this area for rabbits. Like, something that a lot of people, a lot of hunters don't ever even do. You know, the big three are like bass, turkey, and deer. That's what makes up 90% of the hunting industry. And here we've got a conservation department that is literally just clearing stuff, mounting up brush piles, creating the perfect habitat for rabbits to bounce back and forth for the few of us that go out and actually chase them.
Yeah. Yep. A lot of your game bird species, like, you know, your rough grouse and your woodcock, like, there's not too many people as you run into the woods and you go, hey, what are you doing out here? Oh, I'm rough grouse hunting or woodcock hunting. Like, that's not really a very common species, but we're doing timber cuts to promote growth for rough grouse habitat and woodcock habitat. Like, so, like you said, you have your big three. Well, at a wildlife agency, they're managing for those big three, or, you know, some states big four or five, but in the grand scheme of it, they're also managing for other creatures that are either non-game species or are species that, like, very rarely ever do get hunted, or it's not a very popular species to hunt.
Yeah. I just think it's cool, man. The fact that there's a whole industry or a whole career path for people to take that can do this behind the scenes work. Cause I have people all the time, how do I get into the hunting industry? How do I get outside more? How do I do this? And I'm like, you might think that as a podcaster or a content creator, this is all that I do. But really, there are some career fields that will put you in the field almost 20. I mean, when you're on the clock, you're going to be in the field for a good chunk of the time. And so it's like, if you want to do that, it's kind of like you might own a lawn and landscape business, but your time isn't spent cutting the lawn or doing the landscape. You're probably doing the behind the scenes work, doing paperwork, doing payroll, hiring, firing, all of that stuff. It's like there are careers just like what you're in that will actually put you hands on in the places, and they're going to teach you how to manage your own property a ton.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it, like I said previously, it's definitely a very, very rewarding field. You know, and every field job aspect has its positives and its negatives, but 9 times out of 10, the positives do outweigh the negatives.
Yeah. Do you ever have your buddies hit you up like, hey, where'd you band all those birds at?
especially like down south more, and I'd like say, oh well, we banded them on the property, and they're like, yeah, but where at? And I'm like, well, you know, yeah, you gotta get out there and put the work in. Like, you can't just be told where to go all the time. Like, that's half the fun, is going and scouting and putting in your homework, trying to figure out, you know, what's happening. Like in South Carolina, there's the week of Thanksgiving, that's when duck season opens up on public, and like every year about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, that's when I started doing my homework, and I'm going to all my little wood duck holes, and I'm just scouting every single morning, seeing, you know, where the ducks are landing, where they want to be, how they're coming in, you know, taking account to different winds and all that. And throughout the years of being down there and just repeating that process enough, you kind of know which hole you're going to hunt before you even know it. You just need to verify that your ducks are there, because you've already done homework for year after year after year. It's almost like clockwork then. And that's the biggest thing that I always tell people, like, who are new to the industry, like, first get involved, like volunteering with, you know, an outdoor conservation group or something. And then through that, like, don't be afraid to talk to people and put yourself out there and say, like, hey, I'm new to this. Like, what can you tell me? Because for the most part, sportsmen and even sportswomen, like, we are a very close-knit group, and we're not going to tell you everything, but we're going to give you enough to get you started that then you can begin to do your own homework. And then through all that, you're learning, and then you can become successful.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the whole teach a man to fish principle. Like, you give somebody a honey hole with a deer that you know is going to come in, whether it's on a feeder or a food plot, and they're going to have a fun experience. But there's something to be said about working for it and like, hey, I messed this up, I learned this. Yep. Like, you learn so much from your mistakes. There have been deer hunts that I almost didn't learn a thing on because they just happen so easily. I go out there and I just happen to be in the right place at the right time. And it's like, I couldn't really tell you what I got from that, aside from obviously a freezer full of meat. But when you go out there and you mess up and you figure it out on your own, that's when like the lifelong lessons, and for me, the passion really kicks in.
Yeah. So like, that's one thing that I definitely learned how to do better, is put in my homework. Cause like, when you're a kid and in high school and college, like, obviously your main focus is school, and you know, you might be in sports and you go hunting when you can, but like, once you graduate and like kind of progress out into the world on your own, that's when you really do most of your learning. I found out, like, I learned a lot from my dad and my grandpa, you know, watching them and going hunting with them, but you really don't learn until you're out on your own. And you're getting all these different experiences, and you're, you know, going through it all in your head, trying to figure out what you can and can't do, and, you know, what you can improve on, and what, you know, maybe doesn't need improved on. Like, this year, I can tell you, you know, moving back to PA into a new area, you know, didn't know anything about this area. And I just went and I just started scouting as hard as I could in August and even into September some. And then as soon as our archery season came in, I knew where I wanted to be. And, you know, for public land, I ended up seeing 47 deer total for 2 weeks. And that it was on a Thursday of the second week. I had moved back to my original spot after it kind of went cold. And that night, like, I found some fresh buck scrapes. I sat up about 15 yards from them, and in walks in the biggest buck that I've ever seen while hunting, 15 yards broadside, and I smoke them. Like,
dude,
I was so jacked up. Like, I literally shot, and then I just sat back down, and I'm like sitting there, and I've never killed a deer with a bow. So that was my first archery harvest. And I'm sitting there like, all right, I know with a bow, like, you got to kind of let them like do their own thing. You got to give them more time than a rifle. And like what felt was an hour was only like 5 minutes. And I started climbing down out of the tree and like my climber's like shaking off the tree. And I'm like, you got to calm down. Like, you still got to track this deer. And at that moment, like, I didn't even know that, you know, I had smoked them as good as I did. And as soon as I found that arrow laying there with the blood, I was like, oh, dude, you hammered him. Like, this is going to be great. And he literally went 30 yards and crashed. And the rest is history. Like, I learned so much in those 2 weeks and even before that. And then to have that reward that I did, like, yeah, there's times I still think about it, and like, I'm still running on that high and that adrenaline of just being successful and having it all come together.
All right. How many of you guys hate dealing with tangled up rope, trying to untie it? It's all knotted up and you actually really need it at the time. Don't raise your hands because I obviously can't see you, but those days are long gone. Rapid Rope is a quick deploy rope solution that you can pull the length you need and cut it all with one hand. You don't need knives or scissors or a lighter to singe the end because it's cross-threaded to keep it from fraying. Yeah, they've thought of everything. And this is way stronger than your average 550 cord. In fact, this is 1,100 pound test. It comes in a shatterproof canister that you could fit in the cup holder in your vehicle or your backpack, or I don't know if you still wear cargo pants, any one of the 1,000 pockets that you have. It comes in a 120-foot canister, a 70-foot canister, and you can get a rope refill. So just in a matter of seconds, you could be deploying and cutting rope with one hand again. So if you want to stop dealing with the headache of untying rope and detangling everything anytime you need to tie something down, go check out rapidrope.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. If you're an avid listener of this podcast, you've probably heard me talking about Infinite Outdoors in the past. Infinite Outdoors is expanding access for hunting and fishing on private land across the country. From whitetail hunts in Missouri to waterfowl hunts in Wyoming and pheasant hunts in Colorado, they provide access to over 1 million acres of private land listings for all types of hunting and fishing. Best part is, it's incredibly easy to browse and book properties all on the Infinite Outdoors app. The app is free to download and easy to use. All you have to do is sign up and you can browse over 250 different adventures across 10 states. Download the app today and use NOMADIC15 for 15% off your membership. Dude, that is awesome, man. That's a good feeling, and especially for it to be your first archery kill. Like, there's nothing... Don't get me wrong, I love rifle hunting. I will forever rifle hunt. But there's something about punching that trigger or hitting that release and just watching your arrow fly, hit its mark. It's one of the most magical things in the outdoor world.
Yeah, yeah. And like, there's times when you are archery hunting, like, you probably kick yourself and think, man, I wish I had my rifle. But like, to be able to fool a mature buck into getting that close, because obviously, you know, you're not making 60, 70 yard shots with a bow. Like, that's even more challenging and rewarding because you tricked him to get that close.
Yeah.
And it just, everything just went in your favor with that. And I mean, I joke with my buddies, like I might as well just never go bow hunting again, because there's a good chance, like I will never kill a deer like that again with my bow. Not unless I go out of state or I'm like extremely lucky and, you know, end up harvesting one bigger, but like, well, he was a 10 point, 22 inch spread inside. Like he wasn't thick, but he was wide. And October 16th, he weighed 210 pounds.
Jeez.
And before rut. So I don't even know what he would have been, you know, had he been, you know, in rut.
Yeah. Man, 22 inch inside spread. I love tall deer, but there is something about that just wide, wide rack that gets me every time.
Yeah. Like when I first saw him coming, it was like starting to get dark. And I looked up and I'm like, I don't remember that object being there. And then I was like, well, it's starting to get dark. And, you know, like your mind plays tricks on you in the morning when it's getting dark. And next thing I saw him thrash a bush and I was like, oh, no, I know what that is. He's beelining right for me. And he sniffed his scrape and he got mad. He got real mad because I messed with his scrape a little bit. And he turned broadside at 15 and I was like, well, that was your mistake. And we drilled him, so.
Dude, that is awesome. Congrats, man. I love hearing the stories of success like that and just how fired up you get. But similar to you, man, growing up, I would go out hunting, and I went out hunting and didn't learn a whole lot. You know, it's like the generations before me, and I'm not saying my parents were bad hunters by any means. Like, they would get deer all the time. But where we hunted, it was such a target-rich environment that, like, you could almost pull the trigger blindly in any direction and kill a deer at certain seasons or on opening day. But it was like, I remember walking out there, and my dad would point out deer sign to me, or like buck scrapes or rubs or different tracks. And it was never like, hey, we're going to sit right here because there's a scrape line that runs right through here. They're going to be coming off of this field in the early morning, heading toward bedding. Like, I didn't have any of that. And it really wasn't until I had to force myself to learn some of this again on my own, living down here in Missouri, where I had a guy from work at one point, he said, dude, you'll be lucky to even see a deer during hunting season. And I'm thinking, what? Like, there's mornings that I would sit and see 60 deer in Wisconsin. And you're telling me I might not even see one the whole season? And come to find out, that guy probably was in the same boat. He sat in the same tree, probably didn't even take it down, maybe changed the ratchet straps every 4 years, you know.
Yep.
But once I actually started learning this stuff and looking at the sign and becoming a student of the animal, that's when everything changed for me.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely like how I started out. Like, dad and grandpa, we go up to the mountains in PA. Like, we already knew where our stands were or where we were going to put them. And that's literally where we hunted for 3 or 4 days straight. Now the area that we were in, it wasn't target rich. There'd be times that you'd be lucky if you saw a deer in 4 days. It's just, you know, mountain hunting is just different. Now, I was extremely blessed with where I was to harvest 5, you know, doe in 5 years. So that was a blessing, and it kind of spoils you. But then, like, when you're not harvesting as a kid, like, you don't get discouraged, but it's like you have these expectations, and when they don't happen, like, you get a little disappointed.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I feel like that's the outdoor industry's biggest challenge right now, is keeping kids involved and engaged. Because when I was a kid, there was no such thing as smart TVs. There wasn't numerous stations. There wasn't iPhones, like all this other stuff. Like, it did not exist. Like, you pretty much played outside with your friends, you know, whenever it was nice out.
Yeah.
And today's world, it's just like, it's difficult to get kids interested in the outdoors and keep them engaged. And that's our biggest challenge, in my opinion, is keeping the younger generations engaged so that they can carry on what we have already started.
Yeah, I think with kids, it's like they have such a short attention span, but once you introduce them to something that they is new, is adventurous, that they're enjoying, like we take our kids camping and we got a side-by-side, a good couple friend of ours got a side-by-side. They have kids the same age as ours, and we've been going out. And it's funny because when we're at home, like today was a rainy day, it's like, can I watch on the TV? Can I play on my iPad? This and that. When we're out there, it's like, when are we going to the river? I want to throw more rocks in the river. I want to find this. I want to find that. Like my daughter, I don't even know the technical term. I'm not like a big rock guy. Although I think when I find cool ones, I'm like, this is amazing. I need to get into this. She just, yeah. I think it was a geode. She walks over with a rock and there was like a cavity in it just covered in some type of crystals. And it was just like sitting in the river and she walked over and she's like, Dad, these are gems. These are diamonds. And I'm like, I have no idea what those are, but that's a freaking cool rock. And now it's like all the kids are just on a scavenger hunt trying to find, do you think there's gold out here? Do you think there's a real crystal out here? Do these crystals have powers? You know, like they're asking a million questions. And I'm like, not a single time when we are camping or when we're side-by-siding or playing in the river do they ask about any of the other stuff. They don't want their games. They don't want their iPad. They are just having the time of their lives. And I'm sure people are going to experience it where they are asking for those things, but you get them interested in enough, you teach them how to skip a rock, and they're going to be interested. Like they're going to want to do that all day long.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just getting them to be engaged in the beginning.
Yep.
And it's probably only going to get harder with the technology advancements because like I said, like, kids just, they have so much technology at their, like, available, and, like, they don't even think of the outdoors. Like, when I was a kid, like, we didn't have tech, like you said, we didn't have the technology come with us on a camping trip. Like, it was literally us, a camping stove, a tent, and a fire. Like, that's your camp, that's your whole weekend or, you know, however many days. And now it's like you can get Wi-Fi at campgrounds and you get cable, and it's just like it's all changing. And it just concerns me that if we don't get this a big push of youth involved, like what is going to be of the hunting industry and even like the outdoor industries and agencies, like what is that going to be in 15, 20, 25 years.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting to see where like my generation, I feel like we grew up with it. You know, like if you grew up in a hunting family, you were a hunter. If you didn't, you weren't. Like you weren't just going to get into it, right? And even now, like my kids are going to grow up in the outdoors. They're going to grow up hunting and fishing. But I see not a huge push of new youth recruits, but like the adult onset hunters. And I think that is probably the one advantage or one of the big advantages of social media is people are seeing this and there's content being pushed out. Like there's a huge boom, even in like the hipsters where they're like, we want healthy meat. We want to go to Mama Jean's. We want to go to Trader Joe's. We want things like that. We know where they came from. And then they're like, wait a minute, we've never been for hunting, but now you're telling me this is actually really good, healthy meat. And you see people that you're like, dude, that dude, there's no chance he's a hunter. And then he starts talking about it. And he's like, man, I got into hunting like 3 years ago and I just went out west for my first trip. And I'm like, bro, I would have expected you to make like a really good cup of coffee, but not to be an elk slayer.
Yeah. I think if there's one positive from COVID, it was that. Like world shut down, everyone resorted back to the outdoors. Yeah. And I think that helped us. So like COVID was bad. And like, I hope we never have to go through something like that again, but it definitely helped the outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely did. And I've heard so many mixed reviews. I'm like, as a hunter, you have to be pro recruitment. Like the guys who are, oh, they're going to take my spot, they're going to do this, they're going to do that. I'm like, if you look at it that way and you want your kids and grandkids to grow up in the hunting, like there's not going to be anything for them. And I'm not the guy who's out there on the street corner, like recruit hunters now, teach a kid to hunt, you know, like, but you better believe I take people out all the time. I get my buddies, the ones who are, I've got a friend right now, I'm still working on him, getting him out to hunt. And he's like, dude, aren't there coyotes out there? And I'm like, hey man, like it's not the Wild West. It's not like a pack of wolves is waiting around every corner. These are coyotes and odds are they're going to see you 700 yards away and book it the other direction. But it's like getting people out who have no idea. I mean, even my pastor, we took my pastor out rabbit hunting on that trip I was telling you about. And he had the time of his life. He didn't hit a single rabbit, but he's like, dude, I can see why you're into this. Like, this is pretty fun. Yep.
Yeah. And that's just it. Like, they don't even have to be successful. Like, even if they just see something like that they've never seen before, that's going to keep them engaged and like get them hooked. Like, I could have given up after those 5 years of not killing a deer and just been like, yeah, you know what? Hunting's not any fun anymore. But it's not always about harvesting. It's about what you see. Like, I saw some things, you know, that I don't know if I'll ever see again. You know, like I saw some turkeys, you know, start fighting in the fall. Like, I never saw that again to date. This year, I finally saw little bucks like sparring and rattling, you know, and fighting, you know, right below me. Like, I've never seen that in the wild. You always see it on TV, but I'd never seen it till this year. So like, there's always something new that's going to happen that you haven't experienced. And even if you're not getting new experiences, it's because you're passionate about the outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. I've seen over the past few years, I've seen some pretty crazy stuff, especially this year. I got my dog back from training. He was down in Texas for 11 months getting trained for waterfowl and retrieving. And I got him back and I was like, dude, I'm pumped. We had just a really weird winter and the birds didn't move down. And then by the time they did move down, everything froze over. And so I didn't kill a single duck or goose this year. And granted, I didn't go out a whole ton, but there was one morning I'm like, you know what? I'm taking my dog. I'm going to sit at the farm pond, see what happens. And I get out there and I hear splashing in the water. And I'm thinking, did birds drop in before dark? And I didn't see it. And so I'm kind of watching, the sun's coming up and I see two things swimming. And I'm like, dude, those don't look like ducks. Here, there were two river otters and they swam out into the pond. And dude, I was watching them dive down. They were grabbing fish coming up. And if it was a small fish, they'd sit there and just chomp it, swallow it, and then go back down and grab another one. If it was a big one, they'd swim all the way over to the bank right in front of me and just devour it. And it blew my mind watching two otters probably pull between a dozen and two dozen fish out of this pond in a matter of an hour. I'm like, dude, I can't even catch fish like that. Like, these things are pretty good at what they do, but also there's not going to be fish left in these ponds if these keep coming back.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I like being down south, obviously, you know, you got warmer weather year round and everything pushes south, you know, bird wise. And there's been times where my dog and I and my buddies were, you know, hunting a pond for ringneck ducks. And the one day, like, I looked over and we're just like kind of standing out in this pond, probably, you know, 60 yards, only up to my waist. And my dog's back on the bank and I look over next to me and on this like little island, there's a gator in the middle of January, just like laying on the bank. And I'm like, had no idea he was there. He wasn't going to
very fast because it was cold, but it's weird hunting in areas that you know there's gators. Like, first time I went into a wood duck swamp, my one buddy guy, he goes, "Oh, Ryan, you know, you're from the north, you don't deal with gators. Just to let you know, if you feel something slide out from underneath your foot, don't freak out. It's just an alligator." Dude, every cypress log that was under the water, anything that I hit, I literally was like, well, this is it. Like, this is where I'm done. I'm going to get killed by a gator. And it's nothing like that at all. Like, I've literally had gators swim by, you know, out a ways from where I'm duck hunting, and they don't care. Like, they just want to get away from you, or they're just going about their thing. And like, it's crazy. Now, it doesn't make me any less easy when I send my dog out to go get a bird.
Yeah.
But like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, all right, if that gator knows I'm here and I'm shooting, like, it doesn't care that my dog's swimming out there.
Yeah.
It's going to get the duck. She's going to bring it back. And that, you know, that's all that matters. So like, there's all kinds of those neat experiences like that. And if you just, you know, embrace it and soak it in, like, you just appreciate it more.
Yeah. I think without the idea of success, like harvesting the one animal you're going after, there's so many other things to get people hooked like that. And for me, I feel like hunting would be a lot less fun if opening day every year I went out and shot a giant buck. Like, there's something to be said about working for it. There's something to be said about failing and figuring it out and adapting, and then maybe getting a second opportunity at something, or, you know, getting a little bit closer each time you go out to their bedding area until you find that sweet spot. And for me and even the kids, like, when I take them out, I'm pointing out so many different things. Like, all right, bud, let me know if you see a bird. And he's like, "Dad, I see a bird." And I'm like, "Where is it?" He's like, "I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's an eagle or a turkey or what." You know, he's six. It's his first year in the woods. And he's pointing out like a little grackle that landed in the bean field. And he's just losing his mind. And I'm watching, you know, he's fidgeting with different things and he's not paying attention. And all of a sudden, boom, his head would pop up. "Dad, I just heard a deer." And I'm thinking, I can see like 300 yards in every direction. I can promise you did not hear a deer. But instead of saying that, I go, "Where is it?" "I don't know. I think it's over there." And so then we're both on binos, like looking for 20 minutes. Yep. And he's just like, the final day I took him out this year, I was like, "Oh, I'm going to take him out to my buddy's place. He's got 10 acres. There's deer all the time. They're pretty used to human presence. They're like in his backyard and on his driveway when I pull in sometimes." And we go up there and my buddy was like, "Dude, the ticks are really bad this year. Make sure you spray down." And so we did. Well, then what happened is after we got set up, the deer came across our path and I never saw it, but I heard it blow. Well, I hear it blow. My son has no idea what that is. I go, "Bub, there's a deer. There's a deer. Like, turn around. Let's get ready." Because I'm thinking we're close enough that we might still see it bound and get a shot at it. And we came back, never even saw the deer, never saw the tail go up, nothing. And what did he do when he came back? "Mom, I almost shot a deer tonight." And he was so pumped. And I'm like, this kid's hooked. He's hooked. Yeah. All he had to do was hear me say there's a deer, and in his mind, that deer was basically almost dead. All right, if you're not using Tacticam's Reveal Cell cameras on your hunting property for scouting or monitoring the wildlife, you are seriously missing out. When you pair that with the Reveal mobile app, you can see the action as it's happening, no matter where you are. In fact, I've got trail cameras up in Wisconsin on the land that we hunt, and not only do I get pictures from those cameras sent to me, I can also track the progress of the camera, the battery life, how much memory is left on the SD card, and I can see what the weather's doing at the time that a picture is taken.
So I can't think of a better tool for scouting, whether it is close to home or in a totally different state. So if you want to stay tuned into the action or just get into the action, go to RevealCellCam.com or TactCam.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall, and some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their Turkey Hunter vest, and I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform, but one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also, or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout.
Yeah, and that's what's important. Like, you have to make it fun for them. Like, when you're not seeing anything, or like it's slow, or just it's their first time, like, you have to make it an enjoyable experience so that they want to go back again.
Yeah.
You know, 'cause social media is good and bad. You know, kids nowadays, they have a lot of social media platforms that they have access to.
Yep.
Well, if they're seeing all their buddies going out and like killing these big bucks, they're going to get discouraged if they don't kill a big buck. And like, that's where I think social media does hurt us a little bit, because what is a trophy to me might not be a trophy to you, or what you consider a trophy might not be a trophy to me. Like, everyone's definition of a trophy is different.
Yeah.
So if a youth goes out and their first deer they harvest is a spike, I'm going to be just as excited for them killing that spike as I am if they would have went and, let's say, killed a big Boone and Crockett 12 pointer. Now I'm going to be like, yeah, it's going to be hard to top that for, you know, lifetime, but, you know, good for you. Like, congratulations. Like, I'm still going to be happy, but I would rather them just have an experience, go out and just be excited about whatever animal they harvest, no matter, you know, what species, how big of a rack it has, you know, or, you know, how long a beard and spurs are, you know, stuff like that. Like, I just want them to get involved and get hooked and be like, yeah, this is something that I want to do for the rest of my life. Like, I enjoy being outdoors.
Yeah. Yeah. I think once they get a taste for that, or once they have that aha moment out there, it doesn't matter. Nothing's going to deter them. But the one thing, like, even when I lived in Colorado, I helped out with an organization called Colorado Youth Outdoors. And the whole idea was that a student, so a minor and a mentor, anybody over 18, it could have been a neighbor, a grandpa, an uncle, an aunt, their mom, their older sister, whatever, they would come and we would teach them different things. We would teach them fly tying and fly fishing. We'd teach them spin fishing, rifle and shotgun shooting, archery. And we would do all of this because we knew it's really not that difficult to get a kid hooked on the outdoors and the idea of adventure, going out and doing this, like chasing after animals, especially as boys. I feel like little boys just have that in them. Like, oh, I want to, my son tried to tackle a pig one time, and it was like, it was one of our pigs, but she was about 400 pounds. And she had gotten loose, and he looks at me, he's got his arms out. He's like 2 or 3 years old, arms spread out. This pig is running at him with all her piglets in tow. And I said, Canyon, get on the sidewalk. And he goes, no, Dad, I got this. So like, something in his mind is just like, I'm up for anything. But it's like, it's one thing to get them hooked on it, which I feel like if you're good with kids at all, you can get them excited about anything.
Yep.
It's a totally different thing to give them the resources to continue that. You know, a 14-year-old kid who's hooked on hunting, if he doesn't have a car or somebody to drop him off, he's going to lose interest pretty quick, you know?
Yeah.
Where the program was totally designed, we're going to get
a student and a mentor both in on this so that we know moving forward, once they're done, once they find what they're most passionate about, they've got a way to get from place to place and actually go and pursue this stuff together. So
yeah,
I thought that was a really cool program. But even for me, it's like, I love having nieces and nephews, and I even have brother-in-laws that hit me up and they're like, hey, dude, can he go with you again this year? Or like, when is it my kid's turn? Like, can we go out and shoot? They want to do this. My dad, in fact, just got remarried, and his wife had adopted two girls, and so they're both in high school, and they came down to visit. It was the second time I had met them, but I said, hey, let's go out to the property. We rode around on the four-wheeler and side-by-side. Then I taught them, like, hey, this is how you operate this. And for the next hour and a half, they were just doing laps. I mean, having the time of their lives. I threw on my red dot, my 3x magnifier on my AR, and we set up at the range, and we just plinked steel for another hour and a half. And it was just like, those things click, and I'm like, looking at these two girls, I don't want to judge, but it's like, I don't have anything in common with a 14 and a 16-year-old girl. But then I get them hooked on this, and I just see, like, that look in their eyes when that steel reacts after pulling the trigger, and it's like, oh, my gosh, this is unbelievable.
Yeah. It's like you said, it's that moment. Like, it's just where they're just, that's when you know that they're hooked.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the projects that you've done, like, that have been your most exciting in your career. Because I would imagine you mentioned a bunch of different things that you do. But is there one thing that you're like, dude, I wish I could do that, like, at least once a week?
Oh, that's a tough one. Because, like, obviously I love the hands-on part, like, getting my hands on different species. And then, like, collecting the data through the, you know, GPS units and all that. But I'm like a big duck guy. So the moments I really enjoyed was banding ducks. And for a majority of the time when I was in South Carolina, we rocket netted wood ducks in August. And anyone who lives down south or who has been down south in August knows it is like, oh, it's terrible. It's just hot. It's humid. You have all kinds of biting insects. Like, it's not fun. And to sit down in a pond that we would drain low in the summer to trap these ducks in a ground blind in the middle of August with the sun just beating down on you pretty much all day. Like, it takes a special person. Like, I literally stripped down in the blind when I was by myself and literally just sat there just trying to stay cool. But, like, right at that prime time, I want to say, like, 6:30, 7 o'clock, when all of a sudden you hear all these wood ducks land, and next thing you just see them, like, waddling through the grass up on the bait, and they all get up on the bait, and you shoot the net over them, and you catch, like, 17 to 20. Like, that right there is like when it's all worth it. Now you're gonna look like a sweaty mess coming out the blind, but it feels like AC when you get out. Like, it's amazing how when you flip that blind over your head and you run and you make sure all the ducks are, you know, good under the net, and you start getting them out the net, like, you're like, oh wow, it feels really cool out here. Like, it's not bad at all.
All I'm picturing is like Ace Ventura in the Rhino. Do you remember that?
Like, it is like that. 2 AT.
That's funny, man. Yeah, I could see how that would be super cool and super rewarding. Did you work with them long enough to get the data back and, like, get some reports of harvest from those bands?
Yeah, so most of the bands were killed or harvested, like, in the upstate. There was a couple that were harvested in Georgia because we were right, like, where I worked down there, we were right on the South Carolina-Georgia state line.
Okay.
But, like, the ones that you get the real interesting data from were the woodcock, because we trapped them in South Carolina, And we would get the data points sent to us every now and then by the grad student. One bird went the whole way from South Carolina to Missouri. One bird went the whole way to a skyscraper in the middle of Atlanta. And he stopped, or it stopped there for a couple of days. So the only thing I can guess is this skyscraper had like a bunch of trees and bushes on the top. That's the only thing that makes logical sense to me. And then the most interesting woodcock movement was it went from South Carolina and it landed and stayed dead center at the World Trade Center Memorial for 3 days.
Oh my gosh.
In the middle of New York City. And like, I don't know if you've ever been to that memorial, but like there's bushes in that, but it's not a whole lot.
No.
Like, I really don't know what was there to offer, but it liked it there for 3 days. And then the ringnecks, they went the whole way from South Carolina, like up to Michigan, Wisconsin, and some even went up into Canada. So like, that's kind of giving you an idea of what these, I say little birds are like, they're putting in some miles to migrate and all that. Like, I harvested a wood duck down there and it was banded in Michigan in 2017. And I harvested him in 2019 in South Carolina. Like, I don't know if he kept making that trek back and forth, but if he did, like, think about the mileage that that duck covered.
Oh yeah.
From Michigan to South Carolina.
And like, we have this idea that birds are just migrating north, south. But seeing some of these movements east and west almost across the whole continent, I'm like, this is wild. I get super annoyed because I've only killed two banded birds in my life. My cousin kills them all the time, and it always happens to be when I'm with him. But I've killed two banded doves, and they were both banded within 30 minutes of where I got them. And within 30 days of when I killed them. And I'm like, dang it, man. I just want like one cool story. I want like a Saskatchewan mallard or something like that. Not a neighborhood dove, you know?
Yeah. And that I really honestly, when I harvested my banded wood duck, I literally was like, yeah, I probably banded him. Like, okay. Cool, but like at the same point it's like, oh wow. And then when I like typed in all the data on the band report and it came back from Lansing, Michigan, I'm like, oh wow, like this bird put in some miles. Like, okay. So like I really got excited then.
Yeah, that's cool. Aside from those two, I don't really have any cool band stories. They're all secondhand, but my cousin did shoot he would go in the off season and ask the farmers if they needed help taking care of their pigeons. And they'd be like, yeah. Or even during season, it'd be like, he'd be duck hunting. They'd limit out in the morning. They're like, all right, we're going for goose this evening, but midday, let's go kill some pigeons, you know? And he killed two banded pigeons 1 year. And one of them was some guy's racing pigeon, like I didn't realize they do full cross country pigeon races where it's like they'll drive up to the northern part of the country and let them go, and then they see which one makes it back down to a certain place the fastest. And apparently this one bailed on its route and didn't really want to compete in the races anymore and ended up in this guy's silo for weeks and weeks.
Wow, that's crazy. I did not even know they did stuff like that. So that's mind-blowing to me.
You need to look into it, because we talked to a guy when we were dove hunting 1 year, and we've known him for years, but I haven't been super close. He talked about his racing pigeons, and he's like, dude, you wouldn't believe the kind of prize money that you can get and how much these pigeons are selling for. We're talking like...
Yeah.
Some of these things are going like six figures for a pigeon.
What?
And apparently some of these like the Super Bowl of pigeon races brings in, I think the winner, I don't want to say for sure, but I think it was north of 500 grand that the winner of this pigeon race would get. And I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of messages like, dude, you're way off. And it might be way higher than that. It might be way lower than that. But I'm pretty sure it was somewhere in that range.
Wow. That's absolutely crazy.
And here I am, me and my buddies were dove hunting. And we're like, dude, pigeons, yeah. get them.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, pigeons are fun to hunt. I don't think it's a very popular thing, but like, They're fun to hunt.
Have you gotten to crow hunting?
I did. I did that. So our one dove field at work, in the off season when we got a bunch of snow, the crows like were hammering the sunflowers hard. And me and my coworkers went after work one day, and dude, you want to talk about some savage birds? Like, you shoot one, they don't care. Like, they don't care if it was their best friend. They're diving down at him like to attack him and dead. And you're just like, you can't keep your gun loaded fast enough. Like, yeah. It's nuts.
Yeah. I experienced it for the first time a couple of years ago. I went to a conservation department here in Missouri and they did a predator seminar. And so we're like learning about a bunch of different stuff. I actually learned some really cool things that I didn't know before. And in my mind, it's going to be like a bunch of kids, educational. And then I walked away from that having a newfound passion for all things predator hunting. And one of the things they did, they were like, hey, if you guys don't crow hunt, that's another fun opportunity to get out. And he's like, crow hunting really can improve a lot. Like, they'll eat anything and everything. They'll terrorize other birds. They do a lot of damage. And they're like, so most people don't eat crow, but it is a fun way to get out, you know, clean the dust out of the barrel, that type of thing. And so they're like, Now, before you guys leave, anybody who wants, they can come out to this field and we're going to show you kind of what you do. And they put an owl decoy up in a tree, like on a low hanging branch, a couple of crow decoys underneath it, and then they just pulled out this electronic call, and they played this crow fight. And it was almost immediate. There were crows, and I'm like, all right, this seems a little bit fishy. Like, this is pretty easy. And I didn't put much thought to it until this year. Me and my buddy went out, and we tried to do some raccoon calling, and I had never done that either. Completely unsuccessful. But I noticed in my neighbor's corn, there were a ton of crows. And so I flipped that call on, and within 90 seconds, we had 50 crows on top of us. And I'm like, all right, I do love waterfowl hunting, but this is pretty easy and a lot of fun. And it's wild seeing that many crows, but they're so smart, man. It's tough. Once they hear that shot, they're educated, and it's like, you got to really switch things up.
That is one thing about crows, is they like, they do not forget. Like, because we hunted them multiple times, and like, we'd switch up and like try decoys and that, and eventually, like, by towards the end of the season, like, they were just like, they'd fly right over. Like, you could not convince them otherwise.
I always take things to an extreme, and I don't know why, but I'm like, dude, what about this? What if we go get some like red paint and like a brown blanket and cover it in red paint and throw it out there, and it's going to look like a deer carcass, and then we just sit here? And he's like, yeah, we could do that. But I kid you not, I had like 3 days left to crow hunt of the season, and I went and bought out a bunch of decoys. I was so hooked, and I'm like, how did I discover this the last week of season? This sucks.
Yeah, no, it, like I said, there, hunters really don't have an off season like we say that we do, but I feel like most of us just progress like from species to species. And like, then like in the summertime, usually we take up fishing, but then like there towards the end of the summer, like you have to start thinking about scouting for deer. It's almost like a never ending cycle.
Yep.
Even though we feel like it takes an eternity to get like to October and November.
It really does. That one like period that there's really nothing aside from predators and then fishing, it just seems like it's never going to get here. But it always comes around. Are you gearing up for a turkey season right now, or is that already in full swing?
No. So turkey season does not start till May 4th here in PA, which we've always been later. I don't know why. It's just how we've always been.
Yeah.
But I started seeing some birds like strutting and all that back in January, when we were trying to trap turkeys, which it's pretty common. I mean, they're not developed being a hierarchy at that point, but like now when I'm driving to work or I'm out at work, like you're starting to see these hierarchies like divvy out and, you know, divide. Cause just like 3 weeks ago, there was a group of five toms like strutting together. And now like, if I see them, it's like one or two toms. So like they're all starting to get in that mode. Now I know, down south where I used to work, they started, I believe, April 1st, and they go till the end of April. So like they're in a full swing.
Yeah, we start the 15th here. So we're creeping up pretty quick on it. And I'm so weird about turkeys, man. Like as soon as opening day gets here, I'm like, all right, I'm pretty invested. But even leading up to that, I'm like, nah. I watch my trail cameras. I see them moving around. The weird thing is, just like 3 nights ago, the property that I hunt that I've got a ton of trail cameras on, all of a sudden the cows were in the bean field. And I'm like, they never put them in there. And so I thought that was kind of weird. And so now I'm like, well, crap, I might have to go pull all my cameras out because I've had those cows destroy like three cameras in one night. And I only put them on the spots that the cows can't get for that reason. But now also with those cows in there, I haven't seen a single turkey. And I mean, hopefully they're isolated to that spot, because if they are, it's going to be a killer turkey season, because there's a spot that they really love to hang out, but there's always cows spread out feeding in there and they just don't seem to like to be around the cows. So who knows? Turkey season's next on the agenda, and I think I might try to kill some pigs in Texas here late April.
Okay.
But other than that, man, we're starting to get to that lull we're talking about, and I'm not looking forward to it.
Yeah, me either, but it always seems like it takes forever, but then it gets here, and then, like, as quick as it gets here, I feel like it goes by even faster. Like... Just yesterday, I feel like I harvested my buck, and here we already are in April, and I'm starting to transition to turkeys. Like, I deer seasons just keep getting shorter and shorter.
Yep, and time just flies so much quicker as you get older. I've discovered that too. I'm just like, dude, it is years just flash by like that now. But, dude, I appreciate you hopping on. We've been on for a while. Before we hop off, a couple things. Let's do this first. If you could hunt any species, any location with any weapon, what are you doing?
That's tough. There's so much stuff that I want to do, but I think I would have to hunt waterfowl. And as much as I've killed mallards up here in PA, I think I just want to go down to Arkansas and experience a flooded timber Arkansas mallard hunter.
Dude, I don't think I've heard that as a number one response yet. So now I know how invested you are in waterfowl. Like, that's a diehard waterfowler right there.
Yeah. I mean, I went out to Wyoming 2 years ago, and the only time that I thought I'd be going to Wyoming to hunt was going to be for like elk, mule deer, pronghorn. No, I went out to a buddy out there and went after ducks and hunted common goldeneye, bufflehead, mallards, gadwall, geese, like all that. Had a killer time. Like first evening there, limited out on goldeneyes, all drakes. Like got two mountable birds, And then the next morning we went out on the lake, killed my like stud Drake bufflehead. Like I was tickled pink.
Yeah, dude, I've gotten a lot of hate for giving up the fact that the mountain range has a ton of birds. There's some people out there that were not happy when I said the Rocky Mountain Front Range holds a pile of ducks and geese. Yeah. And honestly, some of the best hunts I've ever had in my life were within view of the city and in view of the mountains. So, it's a good spot out there.
It is.
Well, before we hop off, where can people find you? Where can they follow along?
So I am on Instagram at RMK5339, and then I am also on Facebook as Ryan Kleindienst.
Nice. Dude, I really do appreciate you hopping on. It was a fun conversation. Like all good conversations, it flew by, and maybe that's because we're getting older. Yeah. But thanks for hopping on, man, and good luck this season. Hopefully those turkeys work for you.
I hope so.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.